Hey, I'm Loredana.
And I'm Christina.
And welcome to Spirit Says. Hello. Hey, Chris. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? This is what I do all the time.
I'm very, very excited that we are on our fourth episode. And we are talking about something interesting today. Do you want to introduce our listeners to what it is we are going to be talking about?
Yeah. So we want to really start getting deeper into the practices of yoga and sharing that with people and teaching it so that you can apply it to your everyday life like we do, and just kind of taking these principles and so that your life can be kind of in a yogic point of view, if you're interested in that. And we're starting to unravel the 8 limbs of yoga. So this will be our first episode discussing the 8 limbs of yoga. And within the 8 limbs of yoga, there's 8 limbs. Actually, one of them, did you know that Ashtanga yoga is actually about the 8 limbs of yoga?
I did not. I just know that it is a hard yoga. I mean, I think of it as a hard yoga.
Is it really? I feel like I did it once, but I'm not sure if that's the one that I did, but I felt like it was not that it was hard, but it was like regimen, you know.
It was very disciplined. I felt very disciplined. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which I enjoyed that. And I actually looked up in a survey, what's the best yoga for you? And said Ashtanga, which is probably because I'm kind of a scatterbrain. That is like,
oh, no. You mean for you? Oh, interesting. Yeah. Oh, I like
you can look that up like and that. Figure out what's okay. The best yoga for you, and it'll tell okay. You. So, but
I just want to backtrack one second.
Yeah,
because I feel like I don't want people listening thinking yoga as just it being the postures, and I don't know if we've ever explained that. So.
Well, that's
why we're talking about. Right. Mm-hmm. So there you go. So that Christina is going to be talking about the 8 limbs, or why we're both going to be, because, you know, when I think when people hear the word yoga, they just think it's about postures.
Absolutely. And actually, that is one of the 8 limbs. Posture is one of the 8 limbs. It's not yoga, the whole. So it's just one of the practices of the 8 limbs of yoga. And so what I was meaning, if I didn't clarify that actually 8 limbs of yoga means is translated as Ashtanga, or vice versa. Ashtanga is translated as 8 limbs of yoga. So there is a specific yoga practice, but they kind of took their name from the 8 limbs. I don't know in depth if they do other stuff, but it is kind of funny to notice that. So basically with the 8 limbs of yoga, this is a practical guidelines that Patanjali had created for us. So if you've read the book, The Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, I have the one that is from Sri Swami Satchananda, which is a really great translation and commentary. And it really just kind of breaks down, because the sutras were something that he would use to teach his class. So it's kind of like little passages of little nuggets of info on how to help you become more on the yogic path. So again, yogic meaning just yoga means actually union, right? The yoking of the spirit and the body together. And
the mind. Right. Okay.
Yeah. So that you're not.
Right.
Yeah. So you feel more like, I remember you were saying this word last week, which I was so happy, or this term last week, which I was so happy, just being back to your connecting with your true nature. So who you really are before life happened and you decided that maybe you started to create this idea of who you are, maybe from what people have told you that you are, or just experiences, giving yourself limitations. Right. And this kind of yoga, actually, if I can just minimize it, just say it just opens up a world of possibilities for you. It takes down the walls for you. So the 8 limbs of yoga, the 8 limbs of yoga are a practical way of thinking about yoga. And just briefly, I'll just tell you what the 8 limbs of yoga are. They are number one, yama, which means restraints; 2, niyama, the observances; 3, asana, which is the postures that we were talking about. 4, pranayama, which is breath control. 5, pratyahara, which is sense withdrawal. 6, dharana, which is concentration. 7, dhyana, which is meditation. And 8, samadhi, which is the bliss state, which is going to be really fun when we get there.
Right. But I mean, the beauty is to go through all of these 8 limbs.
Yes.
And then reach ultimate bliss or nirvana, or, you know, I mean, and we've talked about this already before in our other podcasts, you know, you're not, this is not a, it's not a one road way to get there, you know? Yeah. So,
right.
And as we're going to talk about today, you know, the first yama, it's just the first yama. And like, there's so much to get through in order to even get to bliss, but you can find pieces of bliss in your life every day. So yeah, I think once it's broken down and we really start to live these 8 limbs, you know, we really get to reach parts of ourselves that we know they're there. But you know, they've definitely gotten lost, just through life, you know, growing up, people telling us how to do and how to live and other influences we've had. So,
it's kind of funny because it's like, you got to learn this, almost discipline just to undo it. It's like, you have to learn the discipline to just find the freedom. It's like that.
Absolutely.
Learn the rules, just the way you, so that you know how to break the rules. So that term,
right. Right.
You know, learn the rules well so you know how to break the rules. And that's kind of like what I hope people could think of when they actually even come into my vinyasa yoga classes, that they come in and they're like, okay, I'm here to learn the rules. But once they start to get more comfortable, then they could just flow and just feel good in their own body and not be tied down to this idea of what the shape of this pose should look like, but just feel and enjoy how it feels in your body. So, and right, as far as, right. So now we have the 8 limbs of yoga. So we explained that there's 8 limbs. Within that, we mentioned the yamas. So the yamas, actually there are 4 yamas. So yay, we're going to be going down the 4 yamas, not today. Today we'll just do the first one, and then we'll do the 4 niyamas, and then we'll talk more about the rest of the 8 limbs. But today we're talking about the first yama, which is ahimsa, such a beautiful word. And it means non-harming or non-violence. And some people have even thought of it to mean non-killing, but it's actually, you know, of course you don't want to kill people or anything, but you know, that's actually not what I've read to be
the exact meaning.
So.
And it's funny because the word violence already just sounds so violent. So people are always going to associate that as, well, I don't kill. So, okay, great. First one down. And it's like, there's so much.
All right, I'm done. Okay, let's move on. No.
Right. There's so much more to the not, because it's just, it's nonviolence to other people and truly nonviolence to your own self, you know, self-harm. And,
you know, it's the pathway of
power. And it's not even a physical thing. Yeah, exactly. And it's not a physical thing. It's not about, like, you know, a tool you would use to harm yourself. We harm ourselves even just by our own self-talk. So I think that all plays into this first yama.
Yeah, if you also physically hurt yourself, you want to stop doing that too anyway. So don't do that. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right.
So, Lori, I don't know if you want to start it off about, you know, I have this kind of crazy map that I wrote here about the yamas too. I'm so excited to be talking to you about this. I mean, ahimsa, but I'm so excited to be talking to you about this because we haven't talked to each other previously about this. And so I feel like I'm learning a lot from you on this, because I don't know what your thing is on it.
I think, you know, like I was talking, you know, ahimsa, nonviolence. I think a lot, like I said, a lot of people, even myself, when I first started reading, thinking, okay, well, I'm not harming anyone and I wouldn't harm myself. So, and I'm thinking it in physical terms, but you know, it also means, like I said, the self-talk that we do to ourselves every day. You know, when we say things like, you know, things like, I'm not a good enough mom, or, or like if I don't get something, you know, I'm like, oh, I'm so stupid, or, you know, like things like that, or feeling hurried, afraid, powerless.
Like if you don't understand something, like if you don't understand,
right, right,
like you're putting yourself down, yes, or something like that.
Yes, yes, putting myself down, you know, so that when we act like this towards ourselves, it can then, you know, we have these bursts of anger towards other people. So we're harming ourselves, we're being violent with ourselves, and then we're being violent with others. And I mean, I know as a human, I've done it. I get, you know, I have angry outbursts, you know. So I think that's for me, that is what ahimsa means.
Your main thing, right? Just harming by, you know, thinking negative things towards mm-hmm. yourself.
Right.
And no, absolutely. I feel like, so one of the things that, you know, we actually, I think, kind of talked about this, we touched base on this in one of our previous, we did a lot of touching base on this, negative thoughts on our, right. our podcast. Was that our second podcast? And, you know, absolutely, self-harm by thinking negative things. And one of the ways that we have to, sometimes we don't even realize that we're doing it, right? We don't realize that we're causing right. harm on ourselves. We don't realize that just because we couldn't answer a question correctly, or we got the wrong answer, or somebody thinks that we sound ridiculous or whatever, now we've decided to bash ourselves because of it and put ourselves down and think that we're less, which is so harmful. Yes. It feels ugly inside when you even start doing that, but sometimes we don't even realize that we're doing that. So we have to kind of have that awareness of our thoughts. We have to bring it back to, what is my mind thinking right now?
And I
hear you on this one totally, because I remember I was telling you, this wasn't even on the podcast. I used to have a really big problem talking to people, because everything I would say, I would be self-critical. I would think that everything I said was stupid the minute that it left my mouth. And it probably had to do with, I was surrounded by a lot of intelligent people. I was living in Manhattan for a long time. So I had a lot of people that knew a lot of stuff that I didn't know. And because of it, I was putting myself down a lot. So everything I said, I'm like, you think that's stupid. They wouldn't know that I was thinking that, but maybe they would, because we could usually see that stuff. As I got older, I learned actually from teaching my students, when they would be so forgiving of anything that I said, if whether I made a mistake or whatever, after the class, they'd be like, class was great. And I'll be like, what? Like you thought class was great when I sat there and I was like, oh my gosh, I hope they understood what I just said. So mm-hmm. one of the things that I started to realize that was that I was actually inflicting harm on myself for no reason. Yes. People were enjoying, you know, my teaching, my company, you know, and I was sitting there being the one bashing myself. So I had to, when I was teaching class, I would take notice whenever that thought, that self-critical thought would pop in, and I would say, nope, let it go. It would almost like just shooing right. it away.
Right.
And the more you do that, the less those thoughts actually come into your head.
Yes. So, I mean, So the book that I was reading, you know, the book that I was reading, The Yamas and the Niyamas, about from Deborah Adele. So it talks about, you know, ways, yes, being definitely being self-aware. So we have to find balance, right? Courage is involved. There's also self-love and compassion, forgiveness. So we need to find and do all of these things in order to be nonviolent, in order to be in a state of, you know, speaking nicely to ourselves. I think throughout our podcast, we're going to come back to the fact that it always starts with us first. So if it's mm-hmm. not within us, then we cannot give it to other people. You know, what's that saying? If my cup is half empty, you know, how am I supposed to fill your cup? You know, so
yeah.
kind of that thing. So it's like, how do we find the compassion? How do we find the self-love? How do we find the balance? And in the book, it says fear is violence. So like what is courage, right? Like, what does that even mean to be, like, does it mean to be brave? Does it mean to be, you know, we go through life sometimes not experiencing it because we are so afraid. Mm-hmm. So we don't allow ourselves the courage to do new things. But what happens, I mean, I know my own personal experience, when I've done things, even if I've done them scared, I've learned new things about myself. So in learning new things about myself, I'm now growing. I'm now expanding, you know, who I am. So I think that that's another way to learn how to be nonviolent. Because I think the violence and the self-talk and all of that definitely comes from a lot of fear. I think a lot of the things that go on in the world, wars and all that stuff, I think that comes from fear.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that when we're...
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
No, and I said, and I think that when we're fearful, that's where mm-hmm. the violence comes in. That's yeah. where the self-harm comes in. That's where, you know, we want to stay in these cozy spots, but it's like, we need to grow and expand. And
it's and, like, you know, when you see an animal and like, or a cat or whatever, you know, what's the first thing they do when they're scared? They start, they try to scratch you, or they like
right.
piss at you
because yeah.
you're scared. So
mm-hmm.
it's definitely, you know, we are animals and it's definitely a interesting
it's true.
Way of thinking of fear as being a form of violence because yeah, people, because of fear, they put their defenses up and then
yes.
because they put their defenses up, they're they want to attack just to make sure that they don't get attacked either.
Yes, 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 you know? Yes.
Well, that's interesting. Like if somebody says, even on the, like, not physical sense, but like, you know, somebody laughs at your joke. I'm sorry, not laughs at your joke. Okay. This just reminded me of something when my daughter was a kid. She never used to dance in front of people. Then one time she was dancing and I was so happy. I was so joyous. What is the word?
Okay. You got it. Yeah, joyous. Yeah.
I was joyous.
Uh-huh.
I was joyful. Okay. I was so happy that I was giddy with laughter. And then she thought I was laughing at her. And then she turned around and said, "Stop laughing at me." And she stormed off. And she was so mad at me. And I was crushed because right. I was like, what did I just right. do? I made her think that I was laughing at her. Meanwhile, I just have this weird reflex where when I'm happy, I laugh. It's like a literal reflex.
That's funny. Because when I'm nervous, I laugh. So it's funny that you say when you're happy, you laugh. When I'm nervous, I laugh.
Me. You laugh for a lot around me. What does that mean? And now she's nervous.
No, but like when I'm nervous, I get like this, when I'm like put on the spot, I get like this little whatever. But
well,
no,
you it's always funny. Laugh. It makes me so happy. I love it.
But it's crazy that you would laugh at her or you were being happy.
Yeah.
Because she was being her true self. She was conquering her fear of dancing in front of people. And then you were smiling and laughing at her. And because you saw her beauty, you saw her
yeah.
who she truly was. Yeah,
and she was
yeah,
so good yeah. too.
And we need more of that.
She was so good right. too. And to this day, listen, she must have been 5 years old. And to this day, I guess I'm causing harm on myself. I won't let it go. I'm like, why did you do that? Like, if I could go in a time machine, I'd probably go back to that time. Be like,
right. I know. It's crazy about the things that we keep in our heads, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, like. Doing what you know, it's like when we don't do things because of fear, we'll create like scenarios in our heads, right? We'll
yeah.
tell ourselves that, you know, things are unsafe, or you know, we actually wind up like lashing out, like you just said, on other things or on ourselves to protect ourselves. But I think the first way to conquer this nonviolence is to be is courage. Like I think we definitely need to start doing things. And it's easier said than done. I mean, but you know what? There's so many, we live in a world of so many tools that, you know, there's ways to, you know, get over the scenarios that we've, because most fear is in our heads. It's nothing.
Yeah.
Most of the time when we're fearful of stuff, like the things that I fear have never actually happened in my life ever. It's
yeah, right.
Like created.
Well, you know what? It's kind of interesting thinking about how people fear things or they get angry at other people, and maybe what, instead of getting angry at other people, maybe the whole problem is they have a fear that they need to conquer. They need to get brave
yes.
and, you know, come out of their box. I'm not just saying the people of the world, I'm saying people in general, us, you know,
right.
Maybe the whole point of, you know, maybe that whole fear thing is, I'm sorry, maybe that whole anger towards somebody or wanting to stop somebody or, you know, make them think the way I think or whatever, has to do with fear and not understanding, because that's kind of like what fear is like, you don't understand it. When you get comfortable with it, you don't fear it so much anymore.
So true. So, it's so true. Yeah.
I know, guys,
yeah,
profound so stuff here, profound stuff. Okay.
Well, what's on that map of yours? What's on that lovely map you have over there?
Honey, let's see. All right. So you know what? We're still talking about kind of negative thinking towards ourselves and not harming in that way. So, you know, if I could just reiterate being aware of your thoughts and then noticing your thoughts and what's harmful to you, what's hindering you from being the person that you want to be, feeling the way you want to feel, just having that awareness and starting to kind of pluck those thoughts out. And then on another end, thinking negatively about other people, which we were just talking about now, thinking. So now in the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, I love that he talks about thinking negatively of other people, like harming other people, right? Of course, when we think non-harming, the first thing we think of is other people too. We don't even, like you said before, we don't even think about ourselves. But actually harming other people can also harm us too. I don't want you to think that right away. You know, I don't want you to just go, oh, if I harm other people, I'll just hurt myself. I mean, you should think both ways, right? I don't want to harm other people because it's harmful to them. And I don't want to harm other people because it's harmful to myself. It creates this negativity inside of you. And when you think of, so basically one of the things that you, Patanjali was talking about, actually let's talk about the translator. Satchananda was explaining that when you, if you have an experience with somebody else, you get into a fight with them and you say negative things, right? So, you know, whatever, you might think, oh, the damage is done already. I'll apologize to them and hopefully everything will be fine. So that's, there's of course the whole, you know, before that even happens, taking a moment to think to yourself, do I actually even want to say this stuff to this person? Cause that's just going to hurt their feelings. Is it important for me to say this to that person? Is it important for me to lash out when I'm angry at a person? So, okay, let's just say the damage is quote unquote done. You've done it already. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And now afterwards he actually talks about, now this is what I found pretty funny. He was saying, when you've caused some pain on somebody, be respectful to the fact that they're gonna still feel hurt from what you just did. So give them time to actually recover themselves. So don't, if they say, you know, if you said to them some kind of insult and they're lash out, you know, they're mad at you and they're not easily forgiving you, just kind of continue to forgive them and give them that time. Don't turn around and be like, you're just a pain. You know, I apologize.
I do agree.
You know, just giving them.
I do agree with that, because it is, we automatically think that we are allowed to get angry at somebody, say things that are, you know, say things to them. And then we automatically think that we automatically deserve forgiveness the minute we ask sorry. And it's like, no, you have to give them the space to process what just happened. Like, and remember, are you asking for forgiveness for yourself or are you asking it for them? Most of the time you're asking it because you want to repair the relationship, not because it's like, oh, well, there's, you know, like you have to allow the person to process what just happened. Just like, you know, you need to process, but you know, we're not made up that way. So that takes a while. Like we're very ego driven. We're very like, you know, 1 + 1 = 2. So asking for forgiveness automatically means I'm forgiven. You know, like how many times has it happened in many relationships where, you know, a partner or somebody does something wrong and the other partner asks for forgiveness and they're like, oh my God, it's been, you know, 6 months and they're still like, you know, don't trust me. It's like, it, trust is a big thing. You've just broken it and it doesn't automatically just come back that way, you know?
I mean, if you want that, then be okay. Like, I think definitely you have to forgive yourself and you have to give that to other person time to forgive you. So that I thought was really interesting.
I do like that. I really like that a lot. Yeah, because we don't think of it that way. I like that.
Yeah. So, okay, so I took this class, going on a different subject now, about kind of non-violence, right? Or non-killing. And I think that, I think that one of the reasons, and I feel like I've heard this before, or I hope I didn't just assume it, but that yogis become vegetarians because of this this yama, ahimsa, non-harming or non-killing, which, you know, that may very well be the case. And, you know, I think there's another reason why somebody might become a vegetarian is just to make room in the body so that you could do more yoga poses and you can have your spiritual growth and everything. But also, do you have to be a vegetarian to actually be practicing this yama, ahimsa? What do you think, Laura? Do you have to?
I never thought of it that way. I've always wondered why like a lot of yogis, become vegetarian. I think I always thought it because, when you start practicing yoga, there's so much nature that is involved, and there is so much, it's considered that meats and things that are, that things that you're putting into your body are toxic. So I've always thought, well, if you're practicing yoga, you're trying to release your body of these toxic things. And that is why so many people become vegetarian, because you're eating things, that are proper for you, fruits and vegetables and things like that. I've tried the vegetarian route. It does not work. It just doesn't.
When you're born Italian, it's really hard. I'm sorry.
I mean, but I mean, I have always wondered that question myself too.
Yeah.
Why do we?
I do have friends that are vegetarian and I just absolutely love it. I think that they do it. And my husband and I do like to eat vegetarian, but consistently it becomes very hard for me because I will go on and on and on, but I do get, if you're not eating the crazy amount of wonderful vegetables that you're supposed to eat, I get anemia from it. Yes. So, I mean, I don't have a well planned out way to actually do the vegetarianism is one of the reasons why I don't, but I don't,
right.
What I do for myself is I do try not to overindulge in, a lot of meat, because I mean, I have my own ways of thinking about it. I'm not going to break that down for you why I'm not like hooked on like eating steaks and stuff like that anymore.
Right.
One of the things that I went to my, so there's this yoga guru in Manhattan who is absolutely amazing. I went to his class one day, and you have to be a master to be in that class. And this was years ago. I was far from being a master, but I was like, I'm going in anyway. I want to learn from this guru. So here I go, and people were literally standing on their head with no arms, so they're standing on their head with no, and I'm just like, okay, congratulations. But
right.
The first things that he talked about, his name is Sri Dharma Mitri, or Dharma Mitra, but he's fantastic. I only took the one class, and it was so funny because he was like laughing at me at one point while he was helping me kind of get over my own stuff that was in my head, he was also laughing at me. He was like, oh, master. He laughed at me. I was like, wow, what a jerk at the time.
Right. Yeah.
And then later on, but this gentleman in that one class taught me how to get over my fear of being upside down, like on my doing a headstand.
Okay.
He just flipped my legs up onto the wall. He's like, there you go.
Well, he wasn't practicing ahimsa if he laughed at you, because he's now thinking
what he was doing.
So we're not going to take his class. We're not plugging him.
No, I think he's fantastic. I do think he's fantastic. You know, a lot of the old gurus are just perfectly blunt. I think, you know, that's one of the things actually I have here. If the teacher says something to you or a parent says something to you in a non-selfish way, then, and you are able to learn from it, then that's a good kind, that's not harming. But if something is said in a selfish way, then that is harmful. So
right.
Regardless, you know, whether my ego was bruised or not, sometimes you have to definitely bruise that ego to chip away at it. No big deal. But, and also, you know, it helped me find my strength. I had to prove something to him that day. But one of the cool
One of the cool things, yeah.
Is that he said, this is cool, because he's talking about bugs. He said, he was talking about ahimsa, and he said, you know, I don't recommend that you kill any bugs or any animals or anything like that, but if you do it, then you stamp it out really quickly so that you're not hurting them. You're not causing violence to them. So
that is, it's funny that he said that to you. So that is why a lot of people, like when they get to, cause I've always said to myself, wait a minute, like, what is the difference between this whole, like, there's different ways that like animals, I guess, are killed, you know? And remember being told that if you kill, like, the proper way to kill an animal, I cannot believe we're talking about this, but we have to. The proper way to kill an animal is to not make it suffer, you know? Right. Like, you're not supposed to just, like, you know, like, that's the whole point of, like, when people explain hunting and all that stuff. Like, you know, people from back in the day, that is how they ate. They, you know, the men went out and they hunted and they brought food back home. But, you know, the point was not to make the animal suffer. So it is interesting the way, you know, that guru explained that to you. Yeah, definitely do it quickly. And like, you know what, you know, that is being violent, that is being harmful when you're like sitting there, like, you know, whatever, just doing things, just like
torture, right?
Yeah, torture, there you go, torture. Yeah. That is something inside of you that is not proper. But yeah, you know, it brings, know,
it counts with kids, because I know kids like to, you know, torture bugs and whatever.
No, but you know what? It also, like, I also read about the whole, you know, the whole violence to other people also has to do with stop trying to fix other people or telling them how to live their life. That is a form of harming them, because that means you're not trusting them enough for them to trust themselves enough to make choices for themselves. You can definitely be a listening ear, but it does not mean that you then take it upon yourself to judge them and tell them that they're doing something wrong, or, you know, tell them this is how they have to live. Matter of fact, when people go to therapy and they're in their minds, their thought of a therapist is that you're going to go into the room, you're going to tell your therapist what's going on with you, and the therapist is going to tell you, okay, so you need to do A, B, and C in order to get to there. Meanwhile, most therapists are sitting there really listening, and most people that go to therapy really, or most people that just need to get stuff out, just need somebody to listen. That, you know, I know that sometimes I don't want the advice. I just need a listening ear so that I can hear it outside of me to somebody that's neutral, that doesn't know me, you know? So that's another form of non-harming other people, is telling them how to live or judging their lives, or, you know, telling them how to do it or trying to fix others, you know? Like, we should be supporting and loving. Obviously, if they're doing things that are violent to themselves, or, you know, self-harming things, then of course, you know, we step in. But, you know, that is another form of showing nonviolence and non-harming.
You know, it's so funny that you mentioned that, because I feel like originally that was something that I had written down, and then I created my, you know, map. I forgot to put that on there. And what you said reminds me of probably one of the biggest, most important thing that you can learn, that we, I don't think we did know before, but or I definitely did it, and it's called holding the space for people.
Yes.
So I learned this actually from one of my yoga students because we had bumped into to each other in the hallway, and we were talking about one of his experiences. Well, this experience that kind of is his whole life right now. So without like telling his business or anything like that, he talked about, he was teaching me about, you know, people's response to what he was going through, and how when people know that you're going through something really heavy, they don't really know how to react to it. They'll either be like, okay, they need space. They don't want to hear me talking about like how sad this situation is right now, or so I won't call them, you know, or I'm not going to call them.
Or bother them. They feel like they're bothering. Yeah. Right.
Like, let me wait for them to feel better, then I'll talk to them. I don't want to remind them of their sadness by talking to them. And then there's the other point where people actually will see you, and then they'll start saying things that they think are good for you, but are actually harmful to you because they're not holding the space for you. They're not allowing your time for growth. They're not allowing you, if you're that person, you're not allowing the other person to listen. And that's by saying to a person who's, you know, perhaps grieving.
Yes.
And you might go to them, you know what, they're in heaven now, they're in a better place.
Right.
And honestly, you know, it's really hard to figure out what to say to somebody who has experienced an extreme loss. But the most important thing that he told me is actually that, you know, you shouldn't say to them those things. You shouldn't say everything, you know, she's in a better place or he's in a better place, because they need to have their time to feel their pain and to get over, or not even get over, but just spend as much time as they want in it. And to, you know, because it's their
journey. They're allowed to feel their feelings. And that's the thing that I think, I mean, even working with kids, most of the time it's like working with kids and having a child of my own, we are always feeling the need. And even with other people in our lives that are going through stuff, we always feel the need that we have to somehow find these magic words or these magic things to make them feel better. Meanwhile, the best thing to do is to say, you know, when a child has come over to me in the classroom and, you know, they're going through something or they're crying, it's like, okay, you literally can tell them you're allowed to feel that. You should feel that, you know, take a moment to yourself and do that. Like, instead of automatically being like, oh, okay, what can I do? What, you want that toy? You know, you want this, you want that. So like you said, allowing them the space, not trying to fix it, not trying to give them some big solution, and letting them figure it out. Because when you can, as a person, figure something out yourself or go through something, even if it's painful, you become a stronger person. You have now gained the experience. You have now gained knowledge about yourself. And you've now allowed yourself to see that you are, in fact, strong enough. You do have the power to heal and to go through something, and that you're not going to, oh my goodness, you know, fall on your face and, you know, never get back up. So, yeah, I do like the idea of, you know, not always automatically thinking you have to say, you know, we're allowed to literally tell, you know, I have friends that, you know, go through things and I'm like, I'll just say, I don't know what to tell you right now. All I can say is you're absolutely right. It totally sucks. That's it. That's all they want to hear. Or, you know, I'm here to listen if you have anything to say, but you know, like, yeah, it sucks. I'm sorry that you're going through something like that. That's it. Like, we just need to sympathize with somebody and not feel this need to always fix somebody. So
He was also telling me one of the things that you can actually say is just to say, I don't know what to say, you know? I mean, not if it's true, of course, not to lie to somebody, not that that's the go-to, but just if you don't know what to say, then you can share that with the person. I find that I actually have grown from my experience with this person, just being able to learn about what it is to care for somebody and take care of somebody without having to bombard them with, you know, my trying to change them and make them happier. Because I'm not going to sit there and pop a joke, you know, like I'm not going to sit there and try to put a smile on your face. But if you want, if you're having a rough day, I'm going to be there for you to, you know, like I'm going to check in on you. I'm going to pick up the phone and be like, how's it going? And be a good listener and realize you don't have the power to change the situation, but you do have the power to allow someone to express themselves and to be there and hold the space for them. Yoga, even in the postures as a yoga teacher, you don't want to, you know, people could get a little crazy with the adjustments. Verbal adjustments are just, and general overall for the whole class, verbal adjustments are just as good as adjusting somebody by putting your hands on them. And it might even be better to make a verbal adjustment, you know, as opposed to.
When you say people get crazy, what do you mean? Like they get offended or?
I mean, yoga teachers can get a little crazy with the.
Okay.
I mean, I've had fantastic adjustments. Don't get me wrong. I've had some fantastic adjustments, but I think that people, yoga teachers might think it's mandatory just because they've been taught it in their yoga class, but that is again a part of holding the space for someone. If you can give a verbal adjustment to somebody and say to them, you know, shift your left hip back a little bit more and, you know, just, and let them do the work as opposed to you, them feeling like, oh, I can't do the work without them, you know?
Yeah. But you know, and I think going back to holding space, you know, I think, you know, always, I have to always go back here, holding space for yourself. Like you have to, this is a hard thing, but you know, self-love comes with compassion for ourselves, you know, like you have to have compassion for yourself. You have to forgive yourself. You have to tell yourself life is a process. You're not going to get anything right in this lifetime. Or the next lifetime, if you believe in that, you know, like you have to begin with forgiving yourself, giving yourself leniency, you know, not thinking that you're going to get something right the first time, the second time, or the third time, but to just keep trying, to just keep showing up, you know, all those things lead you to not harm yourself, lead you to not then, you know, harm others by feeling that you need to reach this point in your life that you're going to feel this bliss, and if you don't reach it, you get frustrated, and it's like that's not the point of life. The point of life is to just live it and learn and to forgive yourself so that you can forgive others and you can find compassion and the space. So I think it's really interesting to me that nonviolence happens to be the very first yama, and you know, of, you know, the eight limbs, and it's like the, you know, the very first limb, one of the very first, because there's two of the eight limbs of yoga, you know, like it's, you don't think of it that way, because again, you don't think that that's like the root of all the other limbs, you know, you just think nonviolence just, again, automatically means like it's a physical thing, but so much of nonviolence has to do with, you know, words and things that you do to yourself, and if you continue to do these things to yourself, you are never going to grow, and you're never going to go, you know, to me, a limb is like a limb of a tree, and if you can't grow those limbs, you're not going to grow as a person. So,
ooh, that's an interesting way of thinking about that.
Yeah.
I love that. So let's talk, I guess, kind of wrap it up as like, because I know you just said a lot, so I hope I don't feel like I'm asking you to repeat everything you just said. I'm sure you have another perspective too, but how do you think a person can practice this yama, ahimsa, in their daily life? Is that do you want me to answer that?
No, I think you have to find balance. I think it is so very important, we talk about this all the time, self-care, to get quiet. You have to get quiet with yourself. in order to find where the answers are within yourself. You know, so many of us are always looking for the answers outside of ourselves, and we don't get quiet enough to find those answers. And I don't necessarily to find balance is different for everybody. So for me, balance to find quiet is for me to sit quiet. But there are other ways to find quiet. I've found quiet walking in nature. I've found quiet doing, you know, writing. I've found quiet doing some art. I've found quiet painting, you know, not necessarily me painting, but, you know, there's other ways to find the quiet too. And when I mean find the quiet, I mean quiet yourself enough to be able to listen to this voice that is inside of you, because we all have it. I mean, every single one of us has this voice. So I think once we find that, then we can start listening to that voice to get over things like fear, which can lead to violence, to get over the self-harm that we talk to ourselves. We need to find the quiet in order to find the things that we need to forgive ourselves for, because we do often live in states of shame and guilt. And those are things that we need to forgive ourselves for in order to find forgiveness in other people. And we need to forgive ourselves mostly so that we can, in fact, love ourselves. Mm-hmm. So I think the most important thing is to find quiet within yourself, whatever that quiet may be, but like find that time every single day in order to quiet yourself enough to really get to know yourself. Like, who are you without all the things and all the people around you? Who truly are you? Go back to who you truly were before life took over, before people and things took over.
Well, I was a baby. No, I'm just kidding. I was Google Gaga, and those were good times. I feel like there's going to be, when I look at my daughter, I feel like I definitely have seen a shift. I definitely feel like, okay, she's not, I mean, it sounds like she's not fearless, but she does have some inhibitions now. She does have some, like, I could say something to her when there's no friends around. When there's friends around, it's off the table. You're like, mm-hmm. Oh my God, what are you saying? You're so weird. Like, I'm like, oh, okay. I didn't realize that was weird. Okay. Wasn't before, but now it's weird. So it is kind of interesting to think, like, when was the time where I didn't give a crap what other people thought, you know? So I'm going to share my view on that too. Mm-hmm. Like, what can you do every single day to help practice with non-harming? First of all, when I first started to think about ahimsa, non-harming, I actually wrote it on my hand, ahimsa, non-harming, because as a reminder to pay attention to my thoughts throughout the day, when I look in the mirror, when I am just walking from one place to another, just to be cautious, be aware of what my thoughts are. And this may be different for some people, you know, some people probably might feel like, oh, I don't think I say things to myself, but it's like what you were saying about, if you actually take your time to quiet the mind, you might actually notice there is kind of a soundtrack going on that might be harmful to you. So just taking that time to, when you say, you know, like, as you say, quiet, but maybe just kind of, for myself, quiet means, like you said, kind of like to tune in, just be quiet and notice what pops up, you know, like what pops up out of the abyss. And then when that thing pops up, notice, you know, is this actually harmful to me, the way I'm talking, you know, way I'm thinking, or is it good? Is it coming, you know? And then of course, from Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, I don't know, this is a new one for me, because I haven't tried this yet. Thinking about, is what my action that I'm doing right now, is it selfish or selfless? So am I trying to help, if I'm talking to my daughter, for instance, or talking to somebody, am I being selfish? Maybe I'm trying to take somebody from a bad mood to a good mood. Is that for my own selfishness, or is it selfless? Is what I'm doing actually helpful for them? Is it what they need? Is it what they want?
Right.
So that's kind of just the ongoing kind of focus. You can also, I'm going to repeat the same stuff a lot of times. You can always create a mantra for yourself. You can chant. I actually have a new meditation that I'm doing right now to help me be more creative and to evoke more creativity and success in my creativity and success in whatever endeavors. Mm-hmm. So I'm sticking with that practice of that meditation. So I wake up in the morning, I do my morning pages because I know that I need it. I need to get all the gook out of my head so that I can have a more clear mind. And then I, even if I don't want to do it, even if it's not gook, right? Like, my hand is tired, I can't wait for this to be over. I can't stand morning pages. I get it out because I know otherwise I myself am going to have too much stuff stuck in my head and it's just mm-hmm. the way it is. Mm-hmm. Then I do my meditation and then I do my yoga practice and I do that for myself. And then after that, I think you have to allow yourself to experience love for the rest of the day.
No, but I do agree. I like, you just said allow, and I was just going to say, follow up to that and say, you must allow yourself to be put first every single day. Mm-hmm. At any point, the dishes can wait, everything else can wait. You have to, in order to truly get to know yourself, allow yourself, because you are allowed. You are human. You are still an individual. You are not always the mom, the dad, the daughter, the cousin, the sister. You're still a human being that is still trying to live their life. And so you should allow yourself at least 10 to 15 minutes of whatever self-care it is to tune in to yourself. So allowing yourself that is also, you know, like a non-harming thing, because you're allowed. You are allowed that. There's nothing written that says you need to do all these other things first.
And you don't need to go to, and even though I love yoga studios, you don't need to go to a yoga studio.
Absolutely.
You can just tell everybody, hey, I've carved out this amount of time. Don't bother me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm meditating right now. My husband and I do it all the time for each other. You know, he actually posted he actually created a sign for me that when we're doing the podcast, it says recording in progress, you know, so we respect each other's space and our individual growth. And, you know, sometimes it's hard because you might be with somebody that doesn't respect that. And I hope that you're not, and you might have to fight for it a little bit, but you have to continue to fight for yourself really, and not surrender to, you know, well, whatever, I don't have the time and I don't have the space and it is what it is. You just have to say, no, this is important for me. It's important for me. It's important for you. It's important for this world to keep taking care of ourselves individually. And a quick note on when you were talking about fears, you can also overcome fears. I used to be afraid of heights to the point where my knees would shake. And 2 years ago, unfortunately, I didn't get to practice much last year. Actually, I did. I did once, actually. I got over my fear of heights. I mean, just by understanding that I know that my fear of heights is in my head. So all I have to do is just keep challenging myself with the fear of heights. And I literally got over my fear of heights, 40 something years old.
because knowledge is power, right? Yeah. So when we fear things, it's mostly in our heads, things that we've most likely never experienced, but we fear them. Like, I can understand if you fear something that you've already traumatically gone through. So it's a trauma for you. So I get if you fear those things, but when when we talk about, like, my biggest fear was flying. Like, I did not like to fly. Meanwhile, I've flown all my life. But and then when I, then when 9/11 happened, I feared. It was like 9/11 happened, and I became an adult, and I suddenly realized what I could lose, you know. So I wasn't fearful of terrorists. I was just fearful of, like, suddenly being on this plane, whatever, it going down and me losing everybody and everything. But then I started to really had to, because I had to educate myself as to what a plane does. So I wound up taking like a month long online, like, therapy thing on, like, fear of flying. It was like, wow, a fear of flying lesson. And I was able to now get on a plane and understand what all the noises meant, understand what turbulence was, that we weren't going to crash out of a plane, understand what, like, you know, those belly drop feelings, you know, what they're all about. So once I understood that, I was able to get on a plane and be like, oh, okay, I get it now. Like, does it still bother me a little bit when there's turbulence? Absolutely. But I immediately have to go into my lessons and remember what turbulence means and all that. So yeah, you can totally get over your fears, because you got over your fear of heights because you knew you wanted to experience things with yourself and with your daughter. I had to get over my fear of planes because I wanted to experience and go travel and see other places in the world, you know? So, you know, getting over those fears and conquering those fears really opens up an entire world of so many things, you know?
And actually, one of the things that I realized about the conquering my fear, I loved roller coasters. I never had a problem with planes or anything. So it's kind of like, how do you have a fear of heights if you can't even do that? But you should have saw me before when I tried to walk down a lighthouse. It was hilarious. I was laughing at myself because I'm like, my knees are buckling. What is wrong with me? I can't walk down the lighthouse. But what I learned was that it was just, when I give myself too much time to think of all the possibilities and stuff like that, I spend so much time, you know, doing that. That's when the fear actually is created and happens, you know? And then of course, sooner or later, if you create that fear, then you don't have to think that much in order to have that fear anymore. Going back to, I forgot to tell you one more thing about that I read about ahimsa, which I found so cool. So it said that those who practice ahimsa become, first of all, these people that are just glowing beams of light. When they walk into a room, if anybody is actually have tension between each other, like let's say you walk into a room, there's two people there, they have tension between each other. When you walk in that room, the tension will cease because of your practice of ahimsa. So it's like magic, you know what I mean? I always think honestly of all of this stuff as magic, but in a way that, you know, when you
that is interesting,
it comes true. Yeah. So just imagine practicing ahimsa, becoming this person that could just walk into a room, end fights, end wars, you know, end arguments.
Well, because we are energy. We are energy, and energy is felt, and you can feel. You know, that what's that saying, that I feel the tension in the room? You can feel, you literally can feel tension. So imagine when, you know, you can feel love, you can feel somebody walk in who has who practices ahimsa and is like, oh my God, they're like, there's a light to them. So imagine if you can do that for yourself, you know, the light that you can create in yourself.
Yeah. I actually, I keep going on and on, don't I? But I actually, one more thing I want to say. If you're looking for it, you're going to find it. If you're looking for fear, you're going to find it. If you're looking for pain or stress or aggravation, you're going to find it. But if you're not looking for it, you won't find it. You won't. If you allow yourself to enter a place with people that you've had altercations with, and you've decided to yourself, I'm just going to come here and be joy, that's what is going to happen. But if you go there and you decide, oh, I always have problems with these people, something's going to come up, then that's what's going to happen. So the point is, if you think it's going to happen, it's going to happen. So you have to just kind of allow yourself to be the controller of what's going to happen.
And you have the power to control that. You have the power to control your destiny. Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. I think my blabbing is done.
No. I think this was perfect. I love that we're going through all of this, and I love that we're learn, you know, there's so much more to non-harm, you know, that it's not a non-violence, I meant to say. It's not just a physical killing kind of thing, you know, there's so much more to it. And I think that when we become aware of how much we actually do self-harm, you know, it makes you aware. Like you said, when you become aware of these things and you study and that, like I said, knowledge is power, you really start to open yourself up and learn things about yourself.
Yeah, and so then you can start making the changes.
Right, right. So awareness. I appreciate this podcast today.
Cool. So,
yeah.
All right, so did you want to do a takeaway or did we do our takeaways?
I feel like we did our takeaway. I feel like, you know, the takeaway is that there's more to non-violence and ahimsa than you know, just the word violence, you know, there's more to it. That might be the biggest part. There's more to violence than just physically hurting yourself or somebody. There's more to it. So
yeah. You need to rewind this and listen to it again and take some notes, awesome, because hopefully it helps you, and that's the whole point, right?
Definitely.
Cool. Perfect. All right, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for joining us, and I think next week we'll continue. I think there's going to be several podcasts on the
yama. We're going to go down all the yamas and then go down all the niyamas, so yes. We would love to hear from you, by the way. Right now, I'm a little bit confused about the email address that I created. So I think it's Spirit Says
Show.
Spirit Says Show.
Right, at gmail.com.
Yeah. Okay. Spirit Says Show at gmail.com. And so we'd love to hear from you. We'd love to have your comments and hear about what you're interested in talking about or thinking about with us or contemplating with us. Yes. So please.
Definitely.
Please join us again next week and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Take care. Bye.